Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to another coffee chat. This is a very casual conversational segment where I imagine that we're just two friends sitting down to have a conversation about a specific topic. And yes, the topic for today is pregnancy. But what I will say is this doesn't have to just apply to you if you are pregnant, if you're planning on getting pregnant. I'm going to share some things that I wish I had known before being pregnant that don't even necessarily pertain to like going through it individually, but how I could be a better support and how I could be mindful of the things that I say to someone who's pregnant or whose partner is pregnant, for example. So kind of just a roundup of some of these lessons learned, things I might do differently next time. And yeah, just having a real casual chat about pregnancy. And in case you're curious, I am recording this while still being pregnant. I'm currently exactly 41 weeks pregnant. And it's funny because I go in for a checkup today just to make sure that everything is still good with the baby. And then I go to the midwives separately. So I go to the hospital to get that check and then to the midwives. And why did I bring that up? Oh, the reason I wanted to share that is because part of me has this feeling, mind you, I've been very wrong about my quote intuition throughout this pregnancy, but part of me has this feeling that I'm going to give birth on the leap year, which is tomorrow. One of the things that the midwives offered me in the last couple of weeks was what's called a stretch and sweep. At least that's what they call it here in Canada. And I haven't been able to get it the last 2 weeks because I haven't been dilated enough for them to actually do it. But the hope is that I'm able to do it today, which may mean, fingers crossed, that things will get moving. And that just makes me think that I'm going to give birth on the leap year, because this year is a leap year. But anyways, that is completely irrelevant. What I wanted to share is that I'm 41 weeks pregnant, still pregnant recording this episode. And of course, they're pre-scheduled. So by the time it's out, that will no longer be the case. But I guess actually this is a good place to start, because I want to share something that I would absolutely do differently next time. And it's surrounding this idea of the due date. So the first lesson learned, something I would do differently next time, is I would add at least 2 weeks to the due date if I were to tell people the due date. Number one, I actually feel like I would be much more vague generally with like people in my broader circle saying something like, oh, they're due in March or, you know, late summer or something very vague. But for people closer to me, like let's say friends or people that I know are going to be checking in regularly, I would add 2 weeks to the due date. I think the one exception to this would be maybe like close family members who may need to be like aware of the exact timing. But again, just from what I'm learning about due dates, it's so rare that people actually deliver on the due date. The statistic that my midwife gave me was 5% of people deliver on the due date. And I know that different countries, you know, have different ways of calculating the due date or sharing that with their patient. But my midwives have always told me that anything from 37 to 42 weeks is considered normal here. And again, that could be specific to where I live. I'm not sure. But that is what they've told me. And that sort of the due date is just in between those two periods of time. So in between 37 and 42 weeks is roughly where they expect that you could give birth, but that anything technically up until 42 weeks is considered normal. The reason that I'm sharing this is because I had heard people talk about how, you know, around the time of the due date, it starts to feel kind of hellish, for lack of a better word, where, you know, every day maybe you're receiving multiple text messages, which I will say, like, come from a good place. This isn't me complaining about people checking in on me. But if you're already kind of in this state of anticipating something and maybe being a little bit nervous about it, to have that constant check-in and constant reminder and almost like this mentality of like still nothing, still no update, it sucks. I don't like it. And I think also my feeling is personally for me, like I feel totally okay with going over my due date, especially since I was very aware of the fact that it's quite normal for the first time pregnancy, that I was made aware that, again, it's quite normal to go up until 42 weeks. I didn't really ever have like a fear necessarily, like a huge fear of going over. But I think being constantly made aware of that through people checking in that way just makes me overthink it. And another thing that I've kind of felt is, of course, it's like not my choice when this happens. It's not my choice when the baby is ready to, you know, be delivered. But it sort of feels like I'm starting to internalize, like, is there something wrong with me that this isn't happening? And I know that there isn't. But all of this to say, if you are planning on getting pregnant, if your partner is getting pregnant, or, you know, someone that you know, it's not a bad idea to add a little buffer of time. Because my thinking is, you know, if they come before that, then of course people are surprised, they're excited. But if not around that time of the due date that you've been given, you're not getting like a bombardment of perhaps people who are a little bit worried or, you know, constantly checking in with you. And that is definitely something that I would do differently next time. And it's only something that I really thought about in these last couple of weeks. Going hand in hand with that, I think I've been reflecting a lot on the concept of patience and how that is interconnected with my relationship with control. I will admit that I am not necessarily a very patient person, and I also have talked very openly about the fact that I don't like to feel out of control. Now, pregnancy has been an experience for me personally where I've had to learn to navigate that, learn to manage it, and not to, you know, spiral out of control, because essentially I don't have any control over this experience. I don't get to say like, okay, this is when the baby's gonna come or whatever it may be, I guess, with the exception of choosing to get induced. But besides that, I don't have control when this thing is going to happen. And I mean, even throughout the course of pregnancy, there are so many different things that we don't have control over. And in this last final phase of pregnancy, I would say that I've really been learning patience and the value of patience. And what's been interesting is to observe my own behaviors in this last few weeks and to recognize the ways in which I give myself the illusion that I'm in control. Around my second trimester, I started to become aware of all these kind of like natural labor induction techniques, or like, I guess, teas or foods you could eat or different things that you could do to induce labor or maybe even just make labor easier. And what I started to notice, I would say at around 37 weeks, was that I fully had it in my head that, like, if I did all these things, it would happen in that way. And this, again, was something for me that made me feel in control of the timing of things. So I was consuming red raspberry leaf tea. I was eating dates. I was going on tons of walks. I was going on, I was doing curb walking. And the thing is like, I don't regret doing any of these things. I think, especially when it comes to a lot of the exercise that I was doing and continue to do, and the hip opening and the pelvis opening, I do believe that that will be very helpful regardless of whether or not it induced me early, which it did not. But I do believe that these things will be helpful, and they are overall, you know, healthy things to be doing at this point in pregnancy. But at the same time, the reason that I was doing them predominantly with the intention of, like, I want this to be a factor that I can control so that I don't go past my due date. Well, now that I am past it, I'm just wishing I had been a little bit more relaxed with the whole process and at ease and not trying to control things, because again, I just had this idea in my mind that I guess sort of made me feel comfortable that if I did all these things, then a certain outcome that I wanted would happen. But it's realizing that, you know, that's not how this works necessarily. And that's been a powerful lesson for me to remember, not only now as it relates to pregnancy, but just in general, to be just present with the experience. And, you know, everyone who's, you know, had a baby talks about, I shouldn't say everyone, but a lot of people talk about just cherishing the moments because they pass so fast once the baby actually is here. And I just recognized how swept up I got with this need to kind of feel in control. And so this last few weeks has really been teaching me patience and, I guess, like, letting go of control and that idea of surrender. The other theme that kind of goes hand in hand with this idea of patience and letting go of control is learning to trust my body. And that's not something that necessarily comes easy to me, because I feel like there's so much out there that is contradictory towards this idea of trusting our bodies. And again, this has been a practice, this has been a challenge for me to have with myself, not just in the final phase of pregnancy, but throughout. I think one thing that comes to mind is this obsessive need that I have. Again, this is probably a thing about control, but to Google things, to know all the information I need to know. And that's something that I really have tried to counteract throughout pregnancy, to try to reduce the amount of information I was taking in because I found it to be overwhelming, to listen to the professionals that I am working with and to trust them, to trust my body. And there have been several instances where I've overthought something that I was feeling. And don't get me wrong, like, sometimes our bodies are sending us cues, but in my case, it's this need to know everything and understand every single thing that's going on, rather than just to recognize that, like, my body's going through a transformation. It knows what to do. It's designed for this. And it's okay to just relax and trust the experience and trust that my body is capable of, you know, navigating this experience as well as labor. I don't know what it is, but I haven't felt an overwhelming fear towards labor, and I guess I feel pretty lucky to not have that. Now, a lot of people will say that's just because I've never gone through it, so it's like, ignorance is bliss, which, you know what, I'll report back, maybe that's the case. But I've also felt like this kind of ties into how I can be a better support person for other people going through the experience, is I feel like a lot of people want to emphasize the potential trauma of childbirth versus the potential joy and beauty and excitement. And it's interesting because I talked on a YouTube video when I was documenting, you know, the last couple weeks about how I was very hesitant to share my birth plan because I really just didn't want the input. I didn't want to hear the horror stories. And I decided to share a little bit against, you know, what I had initially felt that I wasn't going to share. I was like, you know what? No, maybe I'll, like, this may be helpful for someone else to hear my thought process and to hear that I've kind of changed my mind. And naturally, I get a couple of comments which are like, why are you doing this? This is so dangerous. Essentially, I had spoken about being open to the option of home birth. And I basically said that I have found open-mindedness as it relates to a birth plan to be the best for me, to just not have any solid attachment to, okay, I'm going to do this or I'm going to do that, but just to be completely open. And one of the things that I wanted to be open to was staying put at home. And I discussed that with my midwives. I felt really comfortable about it. And I kind of shared how that had changed from the beginning of the pregnancy, because initially I was like, epidural, hospital, like ASAP. I don't want to think about it. That's what I'm doing. And that started to shift over the course of pregnancy. And I was sharing that. And of course, you have a couple of comments, like I said, of people either being condescending to me for having that choice or making that choice and implying that it's an ill-informed choice, or using that as an opportunity to share horror stories. And don't get me wrong, like, I appreciate that there's so much variability in the birth experience, but what I've recognized is almost like an eagerness for people to share all of the negative sides. And so rarely did I encounter people who shared positive things unless I specifically asked for it. So there were a few times where I, you know, put out a Q&A or asked for people's positive or even neutral birth experiences, and that was really expansive. And I think one thing that I would say in terms of me becoming more open-minded to something like home birth is just how powerful consuming a variety of birth stories has been. And, you know, I think my idea prior to being pregnant of childbirth was like very fearful, very anxious. And that started to shift as I consumed different types of stories. And so I think that can be really important to have a broader perspective on what that experience may be like, because for all I know, I could be one of those people that has a really pleasant, enjoyable experience. And why have I decided that that wouldn't apply to me? Like, why do I think that I'm not one of those people who could be capable of having that experience? And then if I articulate that, if I voice that, why am I coming into contact with so much of a sort of condescending attitude of like, oh, well, you're naive for thinking that, you have no idea what you're prepared for? I think this just speaks to a bigger theme of like letting people have a positive outlook or even a neutral outlook, not just on pregnancy and childbirth, like in general. I find that being positive, being excited about things in life can often be seen as being naive. And I feel like there's, again, an urgency or eagerness with which people want to deflate that positivity or deflate that excitement, regardless of what you're excited about or what you're positive about. And I just find for something like childbirth, I find it so interesting and fascinating that something so transformational, something so exciting for so many people, something so beautiful is so quick to be trampled on and so quick to for people to like share the trauma that they experienced. And again, that's not to devalidate that that is a possibility and that sharing that can be helpful, but I think it's knowing how and when to share those things and with who. So many people talk about how important mindset is when it comes to childbirth and how the mental component of childbirth is very, very important. And because of that, I think it's important to be mindful of what you're sharing with that person when they're about to go through that experience, because those things impact someone's mental landscape. And I just think, to the best of our abilities, if we're able to be supportive of each other as we're about to go through that experience, and, you know, to cultivate feelings of calm and neutrality and perhaps hope and joy and faith. I think that that's a beautiful thing, but I personally have experienced that very rarely in comparison to the number of horror stories, traumatic stories that have been shared with me leading up to this childbirth experience. Another thing that has become really important to me throughout pregnancy, and especially again in this final phase, and I think will be very important as a parent, is self-advocacy and being comfortable advocating for what I feel comfortable with. And I found this to be important at several times throughout the process. At several points throughout pregnancy, I've had to make decisions or advocate for myself in ways that made me feel a bit uncomfortable. So, for example, like this may be silly, but I don't want to inconvenience anyone. I don't want to ask too much of anyone in certain circumstances. And like I said, my initial feeling going into pregnancy was I'm going to go to the hospital ASAP. I'm going to get an epidural ASAP. And I kind of shared that with my midwives early on. Like, this is what I'm thinking. This is my feeling. And then as I started to think a little bit more, do a little bit more research and became interested in home birth, I was like scared to bring it up. I didn't want to, you know, change the plan, inconvenience anyone. And I mean, that's just one example. Another example would be like actual preferences for the labor in terms of like who I want there, what I'm okay with, who I want to be updating, the level of updates that I want to provide. You know, initially, I think going into pregnancy, I was like, oh yeah, like I'll be totally fine with whoever's present at my birth sending updates. And now I've kind of changed my mind on that. I think because of the impact that the constant need for updates closer to delivering has had on me, I'm like, you know what? Actually, I would prefer if the people that are there with me for the delivery are present, are available, are there for support, and are not worried about giving updates and having people check in. And I've also found it very important to communicate with the people that are going to be there. So I guess I'll just share Jamie and my mom. Like, I need you both to manage and regulate any anxiety that you feel about this experience. And if there are times throughout the experience, throughout the delivery, that it's too much, I need you to remove yourself, because I've done so much work to think about my own mindset and to, you know, prepare myself mentally. And I think that everyone kind of has a part to play in that experience and being able to advocate for myself and what's going to make me feel the best. Because I know that, again, that kind of anxious energy at any point throughout this process, but especially during the intensity of childbirth, I don't anticipate that to be relaxing for me or helpful for me. So again, just being able to advocate for myself, to voice my preferences, especially as it relates to childbirth, and to really feel comfortable providing myself with what I need and to ask for the support that I need and to not feel guilt about that. Because again, it is an intense experience, not just pregnancy, but from what I understand, childbirth as well. And it's okay to sort of be selfish in those experiences and to recognize that you have a right to set yourself up in a way that you're going to feel really comfortable and really good about. I also wanted to talk about my thoughts on partner involvement and some interesting things that I've noticed over the course of, you know, chatting with friends about pregnancy or even like parenting. And one of my early observations was that a lot of friends, or like a few friends, I should say, were praising their partners for being really involved either in the pregnancy or in the raising of their child. And I've also seen this on social media, you know, in terms of people saying, oh, I have such a supportive husband. He is babysitting the kids tonight and things along those lines. And I think, of course, that's a positive thing to have a supportive partner. And I'm happy for my friends that feel that. But we had a couple of conversations where I felt something about that statement. And I would ask my friends, like, well, yeah, like, what, why shouldn't they be? What I've noticed with a lot of, like, straight heteronormative couples is there's this expectation, I guess, and this isn't true across the board, but there's this expectation that the woman in the relationship it's kind of her journey, her process, and therefore it is an exceptional circumstance if the man in the relationship is supportive in any way, if they're learning about childbirth, if they're learning about how to be a good birth partner, if they're coming to appointments. And that very early on became something that I was like, this isn't going to be the way it is here, because this is a partnership, this is a team, and I want to be fully supported in a way that isn't, like, that doesn't need to be celebrated. I also talked about this in a YouTube video, but Jamie and I were out for dinner with a couple who are also expecting a number of months ago, and Jamie was talking about a book that he was reading, and it was something to do with childbirth. And the guy in the other couple was kind of like, well, why do you need to know that stuff? Or something along those lines. And it just made me sad and made me realize that, like, that's actually a pretty common mentality, that it's, like, not for the male partner to have to learn these things. And if they are going to learn anything, it's going to be their partner that's teaching them or informing them of certain things, rather than being something that they're independently seeking out on their own. Because, again, it is a 50-50 experience if you're in a partnership. And of course, how every couple is going to navigate that balance is going to be different. And for Jamie and I, it's involved a lot of conversations and not always getting it right. And, you know, trying to course correct and making sure that things feel balanced. But I guess what I'm trying to say here is that perhaps at some point I may have had a similar mentality of, like, not expecting to have a certain level of support, and that if that support was provided, it was something that was going above and beyond, and it would be something that would be worthy of celebrating. I think now I have a slightly different relationship to that, where the person going through the pregnancy more than likely has enough on their plate physically, mentally, emotionally, and it's the bare minimum if you are in a partnership and your partner's pregnant to be involved in that, and not in such a way that you're, like, asking, what do I do? How do I support you necessarily? More from a proactive perspective. I think that is, in my opinion, the blueprint. If you think about, you know, working on a project with someone who was at an equal level to you in a workplace setting, and you're working towards a common goal together, the two of you, it would be well understood that it wouldn't be fair, it wouldn't be appropriate if A, one partner was simply not contributing anything to the project, or B, if one person on the team was constantly asking the other person, like, okay, what do I do now? What do I do now? What do I do now? Give me direction. And so I try to think of that when I think of my standard for partnership and teamwork and, you know, equality in something like pregnancy. I think how I want to close off this episode also is to highlight the fact that everybody's pregnancy journey, everybody's experience with pregnancy is going to be unique. And I think it's really important to let people have their experience without projecting onto it. Now, before I got pregnant, something I would see a lot online was this girl with the list. And it was basically, whether it was a list about pregnancy or childbirth or both, all of the negative, traumatic, scary things that can happen if you get pregnant or if you go into labor. And I think that, combined with a lot of the traumatic stories that are shared, or, you know, a lot of the complaints people have about pregnancy, for me personally, painted a very negative picture of the whole experience. Now, I don't say that to invalidate, again, those things that are on the list or the stories that people share or the difficulty that people can experience that is very valid. I simply say that it's possible that you may not have that experience, and to allow yourself, if you do plan on getting pregnant, to just have your own experience. And part of that for me is like buffering myself from the projections of others, because what I'll say is that my pregnancy experience has been nothing like any of my friends' experiences, completely different from what I expected, and overall very pleasant. I haven't felt at any point like I can't do this anymore. Even being 41 weeks pregnant, you know, a week overdue, I still feel very comfortable. And sure, there have been things that have been challenging, just like anything in life, but I really did prioritize at the very beginning of going into it with an open mind, allowing it to be my own experience. And like I said, the importance and value of being able to create a little buffer from what other people are going to share with you and recognize, like, hey, that's a valid experience, doesn't mean it's going to be mine. And on that note, I think we're going to leave our little coffee date here. I know we jumped around quite a bit in this episode, but that's kind of the point of this format. Let's see if I have a leap year baby. I will keep you all informed. Of course, by the time this episode is out, it will be well past that point. But yeah, thanks for being here. I have really enjoyed sharing my pregnancy journey, not just here, but elsewhere online. And it's always going to be there. So feel free to check that out. And again, it's not just for you if you are planning on going through that yourself. I think that there's value in being able to learn how to support others and to be a good community member towards those who are going through pregnancy. But yeah, that's it for this week. I hope you guys have a great rest of your day, and I'll see you in the next episode.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.